Welcome back to The Blank Canvas, a show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget that you can also listen to the archive shows by going to our own website at www.nagb.org.bs, and you can go to the Learn menu, scroll down to Blank Canvas, and you can listen to all the archive shows and see pictures of who's been on the show and send the MP3 to your friends or whatever you'd like to do. And while you're on the NAGB website, I always say please go visit our calendar, look at our exhibitions, see what's happening. The calendar shows the movies we screen. They're always free. The different artist talks we have, they're always free. Every quarter we do an event that is paid, but it's such a minimal amount, $7 for adults, $5 for students and seniors, and free for kids. And that's a band is playing in the amphitheater. We have free drawing classes. We have a free workshop, all as part of the ticket price. So there's a lot going on at the National Art Gallery, and we always encourage our locals to come on down and join in the fun. We are moving on to continue to discuss the NE9 with our next artist in the studio tonight, Eric Rose. Eric, welcome to The Blank Canvas.
Thank you, Amanda.
Eric's actually a poet as well as a photographer, yeah. Right?
Yes, ma'am.
So you're an artist in many senses. But again, like, I always knew you as you worked for a lot of, you know, Bahamas Information Services, right? And so, you know, I always just considered, I thought you were just a documentary photographer, and then I kind of discovered you had your sort of art practice. And these, the works that you have in the show are really interesting, and in a way they connect to what Danny was speaking about, because Danny's work was all about sort of, you know, division and borders. And your work speaks to those divisions and borders that we have within our own kind of society and island. So can you speak to a little bit about how did you select the pictures, first of all, because they're quite old, they're from the late 90s, right?
Yes.
So you must have, like, gone back into your archive. So what, when you read the call, did that come immediately to you, or did you think, like, how did you respond to the call for works?
Well, firstly, the first piece that I thought of was the one that was entitled An Over the Hill Youth's View of Education, mm-hmm. which is basically just a photograph that I captured with the old Ministry of Education, which would be Collins House, and actually looking through a hole in the fence.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually has a little conceptualization of how someone from where I grew up in Yellow Elder Gardens,
mm-hmm.
and I spent time on East Street, Brome Street, and all those other areas that mm-hmm. you would not think of as being accessible via education.
Mm-hmm.
So once I saw that, I said, you know, this is actually showing what my past was and where I am now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because from there, I actually was able to build on it and actually create something that's totally different from the persons who would be in my area.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also Collins House itself. I mean, mm-hmm. there's quite a lot of important history there, right? Because the Collins Wall, which I kind of am constantly... I find it sort of unbelievable that it's so acknowledged, but it's still standing, right, in so many parts of our community, and that for such a long time that was like the division, right? That was the object. That was like the Berlin Wall of Nassau somehow, right?
Yeah, it was, especially in from what I found out recently from the misconception of what it was as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
So the education of the persons about what it was
mm-hmm.
is actually shown in what we see it as well, to their average Bahamian. And so the Collins House itself represented something colonial, something that mm-hmm. was structured, something that was there before any of us could remember who weren't mm-hmm. there now.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they put education there.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
it's almost like saying, yeah, education is here for you, but we're going to put it inside this colonial box
mm-hmm.
where the powers that be used to be. And
it's a little bit like the art gallery, right?
Yeah.
Well, you said it. I'm just happy to be here.
No, I know. But again, obviously something I'm very conscious of, very aware of, right, is that's one of our biggest challenges is the building, right, is how to make that building feel accessible. I mean, obviously it is accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time, we have a lot of kids that hang out there, and the first time Shadi was there, who lives down Hospital Lane, we were hanging out, and we share a dog. I thought it was my dog. It's his dog. We both have, you know, this pot cake has like five families. It eats a lot. It's very clever. So we finally realized that we both were co-owners on this dog. And we were hanging out one day, and he said, "Can I come in?" And I said, "It's free for children under 12. Like, you can come in every day. Like, you can spend as much time here as you want. Like, it's, you know," but again, that looking at that building, it's not something that your average person thinks is accessible, right? And it's a problem. It's a big problem.
Exactly.
Yeah. And your work kind of speaks to that. So that was the first picture. Then how did you decide to move on to a different series.
When I was looking at the series pieces, these things I have never released. I've never released any of those pictures before.
Yeah.
And I actually shot most of them when I was either 18 or 19. Mm-hmm. So I was still a teenager, just getting used to taking photographs, working in black and white film, Kodak, Tri-X, X-Pan, stuff like that. And I was capturing...
I think only the old people know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm old enough to remember. So actual film that had to be developed in black and white. Yeah,
definitely. And what happened is that the first set of pictures that I have inside the series were those taken in the areas that I grew up in. Yellow Elder, like I said, like some behemoths would know where Cousin McPhee Church is on Blue Road. I remember walking that street going back and forth because I went to Mount Pleasant Green Baptist Church. So I took pictures of the life there, as well as there was even shots of people who had live wells, just get well water off of Blue Hill Road. So some people don't realize that there's people on Blue Hill Road who actually get water right off of Blue Hill Road. So I was able to photograph that. And then I realized that this is where I came from. And when I got to education, my response to education was either good or bad. And that's how it was everybody else who I grew up in the areas that I grew up with. Either you understand that education is a tool, or you shun it and you go back to what you think you should be by what the people around you say, the bad influences, whatnot. So the next shot in the series is actually an image of the Supreme Court. So at that time, you weren't supposed to take a picture of the Supreme Court. You know, but I'm sure the statute of limitations, statute of limitations is over, so so I'm okay with that now. But
so actually, if any police arrive in the gallery, I'll
definitely. But they were cleaning it, so it was open, and I was able to get it.
Right.
And then the other shot that's actually showing where you could end up. You know, if you approach education the wrong way or don't want education.
Right.
And then the other two were shots that I did from a program called the Gentleman's Club. Now, I was in the second year of the Gentleman's Club, which is actually an organization to try teach skills about being a gentleman, as the name says, to the young men. It's a battalion compared to the a cotillion compared to the battalion.
I think there's still an organization like that. Is it still called that?
It's still called that. It's still around. And it's a wonderful organization because it actually gave chances and opportunities to young men in the cities. Like in the image that I have there, the first one actually has people from Montel Heights, McCullough Corner, Yellow Elder, areas that some of the guys in the pictures had their suits on for the first time in their life. In that picture, and that was in Life for Key Club. So I actually focused on how it was a juxtaposition of these young guys who never been anywhere near Life for Key, end up in Life for Key, sitting down in the luxury of the colonial way of
But it's also really interesting because it's a really hard image to decode. Like when you don't know the story, you're looking at it, and you're like, "What's going on here?" Because you know that there's something. I put this in big air quotes, wrong with that picture. Like you're like. What's going on here? Because you would expect in that context to see people of color, either like the few club members, either sitting at a table, like engaging, but of course in a waitering position, right? Or something like that. But these young men are in suits and they're all kind of lounging around, like looking kind of comfortable, like on the, and it's so difficult to parse because you're like, what's going on here? And that alone is so disturbing, right? That when you look at that image, you're like, you know, again, if a bunch of white people lying around, you wouldn't have that same sense of what's going on here, right? And that just that realization is so jarring and so disturbing. So it's a really interesting image for that too, because it's not, you just can't figure out what it is, right? And that alone like leads you to think about all those divisions that still so exist.
Yeah, in fact, exactly, and that's why I was looking at the final photograph. But as he had, was four behemoths in it, four black behemoths in it, but only one with the suit. That was one of the persons, the young people, and the other three were waiters. So I was thinking, my goodness, that could be their uncle, that could be their father, that could be their cousins, who actually walk around serving them while they're dressed in a suit being served. So that's why I named that one, Those Who Serve and Those Being Served, because if it wasn't for certain aspects of their life that changed in some way, they would have been the ones serving.
The ones serving,
well,
exactly.
You know? And there's nothing wrong with that because my mother used to be.
Not at all. But it's so funny because we're trained, right? Like we're speaking about these structures and these borders that we have. Because again, sometimes I remember when I first came here and I'd say, like in my office, when I was a waitress and literally my staff would, like their jaws would drop and they'd say, what? And I'd say, well, yeah, if you live in another country, it's perfectly normal to see white people being waiters and waitresses, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's like something that here might not be familiar. So there's this, you know, kind of idea that white people don't do that. And it's like, no, yeah, there's plenty of white cleaning ladies where, you know, and I've done that too. Like, I worked as a chalet girl. I worked, you know, people do that. That's normal. When you're in mm-hmm. college, you have a job. And yes. you normally have some job like being a waitress.
Yeah.
It's only here where there those divisions are so visually underscored.
And reinforced,
yeah. sure, absolutely, and reinforced. So it's really interesting for that too, because again, it's like what we're trained to assume and understand, and that kind of keeps you in your box too, right?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And the good thing about that is once I was able to focus
in your box, no pun intended, Danny.
No, but and once I was able to focus on that, I also realized the role that education and that opening up the Gentleman's Club had in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I went on from dealing with Junior Achievement Bahamas. I was in JA, and I also mm-hmm. was dealing with youth organizations.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up as a guest on Black Entertainment Television in Washington, D.C. when I was 16.
Wow!
So I was a shock to the system.
Yeah.
And then I was also the first international vice president of Junior Achievement International
mm-hmm.
Forum
mm-hmm.
when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the things that I learned from being in the things that actually was further.
Well, and to actually taking you out of your context so you can see that the box could actually be dismantled.
Exactly.
Or that maybe what you're seeing from inside the box isn't the only way it can be.
Yeah.
I think that's the beauty of travel and of exposure, because again, even something like, I mean, it doesn't change everything overnight, but you travel to Europe and you see again different kinds of people in service, and it does change your, you know, just change the way you look at things, or it, you know, it can't not. And then talking about education, are you then a self-educated photographer, or did you do studies for that?
Actually, I was considered self-educated, but mm-hmm. I also did, once I went to COB, mm-hmm. I actually studied under Margaret Guillaume,
mm-hmm.
The famous, wonderful Margaret
Guillaume.
Yeah,
who still lives down Hospital Lane.
Exactly, and with Margaret Guillaume's teaching, when I went off to university, you know, I went to Clark Atlanta University, and when I showed them my stuff, they were like, you know what, you don't have to take the final exam. You know more than, so you've gotten an A.
And that's also sometimes where traveling comes in. I think we suffer from a huge inferiority complex here as well. Mm-hmm. And I hear over and over, do you really think we're good enough? Or do you think... And sometimes traveling is actually a great thing to do because you realize that, in fact, we are experts at lots of things.
Yeah.
You know, but sometimes you need to go away to... So, like, you know, we send the NHGB staff. We have a program where we send them to other museums to trail people. Mm-hmm. In other museums and sort of watch them do their jobs. And, you know, you do come back with different ideas sometimes, like, oh, they're doing it this way. But, you know, quite often the team comes back and they're like, actually, well, we're doing it kind of better.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's a huge, you know, it really makes the team member be like, wow, you know, I can really then take pride in this place and not be like, oh, yeah, we're just some little institution on an island. You know, and that's, I think, it's something we all kind of grew up with, too, is that we're, oh, yeah, you know, we're never going to be really as good as. And it's just not true.
If I may, but I also see that as carryover from the whole colonialism as well.
Yeah,
this notion that the colony could never be as good as the mainland.
Sure.
So if you maintain that inferiority complex, then you maintain your position.
Of course, and even from the white colonizers, right?
Yes.
Because again, you know, the Duke of Windsor got sent here as punishment, basically, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's how it was seen, is you know, you're being sort of exiled.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, from the you know, top levels of society, there was this thing of like, oh, yeah, you know, and we have to kind of recreate some fantasy of what England is here to like make it, you know. It is something. It's like very insidious. So I think you're totally right.
And I've seen that as well with my interaction with when I go to the country. All the things that I did when I was coming up, being on BET, I actually was the youngest speaker at the National Business Conference with Norman Schwarzkopf, and Steve Jobs was actually in the same event getting an award at the same
event. Wow.
I was 16, 17. None of that got back to Nassau.
I wouldn't have known who Steve Jobs was when I was 16.
Exactly. Not even the news said anything about Bohemian Youth doing all the
right.
stuff. They like, no, it's almost like, he's doing something that's good outside the box. We
right.
don't want him to know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I did my first international award in Beijing, they didn't know that I was a foreigner. When they saw my photography, they I got the first place in for Still Life
mm-hmm.
at a photo art exhibition and competition in Beijing. And they were like, oh, you're the first foreigner to ever get this far in 12
years. I'm pretty surprised they couldn't tell from your name that you're Chinese.
The funny thing about it is that in China, they actually put my name as Eric de Monrose.
Oh, okay.
So they use my first, second, and everything at once.
And also, actually, a lot of Chinese take English names as well. They have a second set of names to be more. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Eric, for sharing all of that with us. Again, like, those images are on display at the NE9, so come on down and see them at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas in our national exhibition, The Fruit and Seed. We're going to go to a quick break now. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break.